Woohoo! Welcome to the Some Work All Play podcast. We are so happy to be with you today.
Happy Tuesday!
It's Tuesday!
And David, I have something very important to tell you on this Tuesday.
Oh my gosh, Megan, what is it?
It's that your life energy is so beefy.
It's beefy? My life energy is beefy?
It's beefy! Isn't that an interesting word? Well, I was texting Amelia Boone earlier, and she drove 45 minutes each way this weekend to Leo's birthday party.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is amazing. Her life energy is so great. And so I sent her this text message. I was like, Amelia, I love your life energy. And it came out of something like, I love your life beefy as an autocorrect. And I kind of love it, actually. I'm going to go with it.
So it autocorrected right before you click send and then you didn't see it in time?
Yeah, you know when it's like the final word and then it goes off and you're like, oh, damn.
Yeah.
But that one I was actually like, this is good, iOS. This is awesome.
I love it. I feel like this podcast is all about bringing that life beefy.
Yeah, the life beefy or the life veggie, whatever like take you, whatever form you take.
Are you trying to say that we just want to inject that life beefy into our listeners?
Yeah, we need that big life beefy. And I feel like you encapsulate that perfectly. And so does Amelia. And I don't know, it's like, I just want to surround myself with people. And actually a lot of this Swap Pass podcast community has that life beefy.
I feel so. Kind of like, you know, corned beef, let's say, or roast beef. You want to surround yourself with that.
I want a corn dog of life beefy.
You want to be a mummy, but instead of like toilet paper or whatever, you want it to be roast beef.
Yeah, I'm just going to be life beefy for Halloween.
That's perfect. And I need some beef right now because I'm recovering from a race this past weekend.
You absolutely crushed it. We had one of the best weekends of all time, actually. We've like, I don't know, it's going to be hard to beat this weekend, but you got a course record at the Blue Sky Marathon.
Thank you.
And you did so. It was like coming down to the wire. It was so cool.
Yeah, it was a really interesting reflection. And we'll get into some training takeaways that really get into science later on and some things I learned. But this race is one of those Colorado staples, and it has had, you know, legends do it in the past. Everybody from, you know, podcast famous Drew Holman, Jackson Brill, but then also people decades ago that have rocked this course. And with like 2 miles to go, I realized that, you know, if I close hard, I have a shot at this course record. And I knew that you and Leo, you and baby Leo, were waiting there. I was like, you know what? I'm gonna go get this for them. And it was amazing how much that mental switch made a difference for me. And for me, it was like the power of support group. So thank you so much for being there, for being the best aid station crew of all time. You got me the course record because I only ended up getting it by 5 seconds officially. And I think it was 10 seconds in my own head. So you saved my ass.
Well, I got so nervous because we were doing this handoff at mile 9 of your 5 gels in your water. And I got so nervous because I knew I was like, he's running fast. I got to do this. This has got to be like a really good baton handoff. And I'm pretty sure my heart rate went to 115 standing there and just being like, I got to execute. But you look great coming through. But then this is the cool part. At the finish, usually you're like all high fives and woohoos and smiles and like giving, you know, baby Leo all the loves and kisses and coming through. And your head was down. You were plowing through. And I don't know, I got really inspired seeing that. It was like a very different life force, a very different life beefy kind of energy coming from you. And I love both.
I like how you said I was plowing through.
Oh yeah, you were steamrolling through.
Yeah. You know how we've called big dump truck energy on the podcast?
Yeah.
For the seasonal change, we're coming up on winter, I had big plow energy.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can make the noise too.
In fact, there were people out there on the course that said big dump truck energy to me as I was running by. It was one of the coolest experiences I've ever had in a race because while I was out there, I had the new swap gear on and it says huzzah on the back. And I think sometimes people don't really realize who you are until you pass or things like that. The number of podcast listeners that were out there screaming their heads off in the half marathon and in the marathon because the course just kind of snaked around itself was one of the cooler life experiences I've ever had. We had big dump truck energy. We had a lot of huzzas. We had a lot of discussions about what I was going to eat after the race. It was wild.
You represented the swap singlet so well. So we sent the singlets out. We actually sent our entire gear order out on Friday. And it was, I mean, this adds to the fact that it was just like such a fun weekend was getting these orders out. And it's been like a labor of love putting this together. And I thought it was really cool because you were the first person to race in a swap singlet.
True.
And you got a course record and you represented. And you came back and there's not a single stain on your singlet. What happened? How did that? I mean, that's very unusual for you.
There wasn't a stain on my singlet, but remember my shorts?
Oh yeah, actually, your shorts look like someone had just like jizzed all over them. Maybe you, maybe someone else. Yeah, they had a beefy on your shorts. And they were green.
Yeah,
actually,
yeah.
You really should wear like black. I mean, I don't know. I affirm and uplift all beefies.
Yeah,
wear whatever you want. It was very epic. But usually you're in black shorts and you can't see that.
Someone beefied all over my shorts. Still caught on that. Yeah, it reminds me of the Lonely Island song. Jizzed in your pants. But yeah, so I definitely had some stuff going on, but my my singlet just prevented all that. So if you want to get in on this gear, it's clearly performance enhancing. It's awesome. We're going to be doing another order via Patreon, patreon.com/swap, S-W-A-P. There you also get a bonus podcast every single week where we just answer 10 listener questions or something like that. A lot more writing on there. That's where we do a lot of the community building stuff. So patreon.com/swap.
And the crop tops crushed it.
Oh my God.
So we had this competitive bet going and
we
I was like,
on the podcast.
I believed in the crop tops through and through. And you had great skepticism actually about the crop tops. And can we just say that I won that battle?
Yeah, you definitely did. Not only did you win emotionally, but you won financially because the crop tops sold so much more than any other piece of clothing, which is interesting to me because like maybe it's my body image talking, but crop tops just seem a little bit like my nightmare personally, but
you haven't worn one yet though.
Yes.
You need to put one on and try it out.
And that made me realize what our next initiative is going to be.
What is it? Yeah.
The crop top challenge or crop top acceptance challenge.
Actually, I see where this is going. Can I reframe it?
Yes.
The crop top sisterhood of the traveling pants. Maybe not sister. We don't need to gender it. The crop top, the crop top hood of the traveling pants.
Come up all up in our hood.
Yes. Yeah.
Maybe don't say that. But I actually think this is a really good idea. So what we're going to do is we're going to take 5 crop tops and $60 value, I think is what it is on Rabbit's site. And we're going to give them out for free to podcast listeners. You don't have to be on Patreon for this. This will be for everyone. If you've ever been curious about a crop top like me, but you've been a little too scared to ever purchase one.
I like that. Crop top curious.
Crop top curious. And so you don't have to keep it. You can try it. If it's for you, great. If it's not, we're going to ask that you send it along to someone else. So we're going to be announcing that next week officially. And we'll be asking for just a few like to contact us if you're interested. But I think it'll be really cool. It's like essentially a body acceptance challenge, not necessarily a body positivity challenge, because I think for people like me, that's sometimes a little harder to have like pure positivity about your body.
Oh yeah. If you can get to body neutrality, that's a great spot to be.
Body neutrality.
Yes. Yes. I think that's even a term. I don't know. We're probably butchering these terms. I think there's like set terms for all of these. So we apologize. This is with great intention.
Yes. Very good intentions and very good crop tops. Okay. So we have the best episode for you today. We're going to start with some thoughts on stress. Then we're going to have 5 training takeaways, including some caffeine science. We're going to try to dig a little bit deeper into some of the things we do personally and use studies to structure that conversation. Talk about a study on shoe wear that just came out that's fascinating if you're thinking about how long your shoes last. Talk about endurance news, some spicy things there. Then finally, Red S, IOC statement, which we've teased for 2 weeks or 3 weeks now and haven't gotten to yet.
Yeah, it's been 3 weeks. It actually reminds me, was it barefoot running that we teased for like 6 months on a podcast episode? Then we finally got to it. So I don't know, as I was going through our podcast outline today, I was like, I don't know if we're going to get to Reds.
It might just be one of those things that we constantly
tease. It's just going to keep going and going and going. Yeah.
Got to keep them hanging, Megan. That's why they come back for more.
Yeah, that's why they got caffeine and that's why we're going to hit it first.
Yes. Okay, so we also want other people to come back for more. So while you're thinking about the podcast, please go give it 5 stars and click follow, which is usually in the upper right of your podcast listener, especially in Apple.
Look at you giving directions.
Really helps people find it. Yes, Megan, I'm just trying to make it easy on people to, you know, give us that sweet, sweet click energy.
With very specific directions. I like that. The upper right-hand corner.
Yes.
It's like you're giving trail directions. You're like, make a right in 0.3 miles.
Exactly. Okay. So first, let's start with some thoughts on stress. You've had some realizations there, right? Like, You mentioned, for example, that this was one of the best weekends ever. And you're saying that on a context where, you know, our listeners know you're dealing with a lot of health issues. You've had heart concerns. They haven't resolved as quickly as we've hoped, even as we've been really optimistic. So yeah, how are you feeling? What are you thinking?
Well, I'm feeling good because this was one of the best weekends ever. And it was actually one of those reflections of like, my soul cup is so filled to the brim right now.
Yeah.
But I ran 0 miles this weekend. And it's kind of an interesting reflection because I think growing up as an athlete, I never imagined I could reach that with these numbers and like with this context. And going to bed last night, we had Leo's first birthday party yesterday. Yay! It was so exciting. And my soul cup was filled to the brim. And I was like, I ran 0 miles this weekend. And I was like proud of myself for that, but also just like swimming in the goodness of his birthday party.
Can we first comment that we kept a baby alive without any major head dents in almost a full year? I mean, his official birthday is next weekend, but
we have 6 days to go.
Yes.
Yes. Don't drop him.
True.
Yes.
It's true. I think he's resilient enough now.
That's true. Actually, this is the nice part about this phase is like, I feel like he's somewhat responsible for himself at this point.
Exactly. You know, a baby that's 51 weeks old, get a fucking job, baby. Pull yourself up by your bootstraps because you are now an adult in my head. But yeah, it was so fun to have the first birthday party. And I mean, you were just radiant throughout the night, even with no miles, even with no endorphins from running. running in your life. It was so cool.
It was so fun. And we had like, what's happened to us? We're not like party people at all. We had a birthday party with three cakes and a whole bunch of our friends and family. And I'm like, man, having a baby changes you.
See, if you told me that you could have a party with three cakes, I would have been much more into parties.
That's a good point.
Like, why hasn't every frat party just lined up cakes? Like where the kegs are, replace it with different types of cakes.
Okay, cake pong?
Oh, shit.
How fun would that be? You just take a shot of cake. Wouldn't that be amazing?
Megan, you just blew my fucking mind.
Or like cake drinking games. How great would that be?
Especially heading.
So we had some athletes at the birthday party, and some athletes were heading into Javelina, and we were like, take leftover cake home. We were trying to send out as much taper cake as humanly possible.
We just screamed every time someone left, taper cake.
Take the taper cake.
I was thinking of drinking games. You know the game that Leo was playing?
What game?
Flip the cake.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Do you remember Flip the Cup?
Flip cup.
Fuck. Yes. Messed up the joke.
Flip cake, yeah.
But exactly. Leo was just throwing it onto the floor. We let him go in with his hands and face. And it was a great reflection. And, you know, seeing you just like exuding this love and kindness to the world while you're going through this was just a really cool moment, especially after I put you in this experience where you had to wake up at 4 a.m. and go to a running race where you can't run the day before, or at least for a few days as we figure everything out. It meant so much to me and also just so inspiring.
Oh, well, thank you. I was fueled by cake because I think the greatness of Leo is that he loves to share just as much as he loves to eat cake, which I think is kind of surprising for a one-year-old. So he was like having a little cake himself and then shoving it in both of our faces and was like, Mom, Dad, here, have cake. Addie, have cake. And then he tried to pass around. He was like chewing up crackers and spitting them out in his hand and trying to pass them around as like party favors to all of our guests, which was great. A classic one-year-old birthday party. But no, I mean, that reflection means a lot. Yeah. I mean, it has been really hard. We talked about that last week in the podcast, how like two episodes ago, I was like, had a lot of hope and optimism. And I feel like these health journeys are just sometimes a straight roller coaster. And I feel like I'm here along for the ride. But I did have a reflection on Friday because last week I was running a little bit and, you know, it just like didn't feel 100%. And I think deep down in my core, I knew that, but my brain like wasn't processing that yet. And I had this major reflection on Friday and I was like, okay, Megan, like your heart is not a hamstring.
Yeah.
And my heart needs to be 100% before I run. And I think I need to like do some internal soul searching and make sure that my heart is at 100% before I get out there. And so I'm going to take a little step back here and really let things heal up.
Yeah. Your heart is not a hamstring, but your heart is like almost as important as a glute.
Yes, that's like, true. Yes.
As important as PTs think your glutes are, engaging your glutes, we're trying to engage your heart.
Oh, I love that. That's a great analogy. Yeah. But it was like, it was one of those things. It's like, we also got an EKG and it like wasn't totally perfect yet.
It was close.
It's getting there. Still has some like little ST segment elevations going on, but
it was slightly imperfect EKG. You know, we celebrate imperfections on this podcast. The one place we have a slight change in the heart on that is involving the heart.
Yeah, exactly. And I was like, a heart should really be 100%. And I think I was kind of fooling myself into thinking that it was close to 100%. And I think it's like 95%, which is not close to 100% in like heartland.
Well, it's hard. Well, heartland. That reminds me, you just used the word heartland and my brain just flashed on. For some reason, the TV we have in our bedroom that's currently right behind Megan's head, it's a smart TV, but it's set to like a baseline channel. And that channel is called Heartland. And every single night we turn on the TV just to get to like our apps like YouTube or Netflix or whatever. And on the TV are people like making eye contact very deeply around horses with cowboy hats on. And we end up watching for 5 minutes.
Oh my God. It's always so engaging.
Yeah.
It's very, it's like low. I feel like it's like low production value TV, but it's like so engaging. I'm like, what are they doing?
I think they're fucking the horses.
I know. I was going to say their eye fucking is next level. Like, teach me how you do that. How do you get that beefy?
Oh damn. That's a lot of beefy. But what your journey has reminded me of a little bit is I saw this graphic of two ramps side by side. Mm-hmm. So both are pointed slightly down and at each end is like a bowling ball or something. So if you just roll the bowling ball down the flat ramp, you know, it just goes at a steady pace. But if you have a drop and then a rise and a drop and a rise and a drop and a rise, that bowling ball will reach the end faster.
Yes.
Like the ups and downs actually do accelerate the process in a way that I think can be really productive. So that's kind of the only way that I think you can reframe these types of ups and downs is that maybe it'll accelerate you through some process of growth, whether that's athletic or otherwise, that will be really productive. And I mean, that's what I've seen in you. Maybe it's not athletic right now, but it is emotional. And it's been an honor just to like be on your side in that journey and share, you know, tears with you and cake with you.
Oh, thank you. Well, actually last night at Leo's birthday party, I didn't tell you this yet, but yeah. I got into this nice conversation with Sasha, one of our closest friends, and she was telling me about advice that her mom gave her, that to talk to yourself like you're your future self, and like what decisions would your future self want you to make? And if my future self saw me running on a heart that was 95%, it would be like, damn girl, get off the trails, get off the roads, get onto the couch.
Yeah.
And it's so hard, I feel like, to make that rationalization like in the moment. But I feel like the more that I frame it for my future self, it's going to be really helpful.
I love that. The future self framework.
Yeah. Yeah. Or what would I tell an athlete framework? Because I certainly would not tell an athlete to run on a 95% heart. And, you know, I need to embrace that for myself too.
Well, I'm so proud of you. And it was just so fun to have you at the race. And that brings us to some training reflections.
Okay. Can we do a deeper dive into your race? Like, dude, we talked about it for 3 minutes.
No.
And you got a course record.
We don't need to talk about the race. We'll slip in some like funny anecdotes throughout.
Okay.
But I think what we need to do is talk about training, because what we often on here talk about training theory, and we really zoom out and talk about theory or studies or whatever, but what are we actually doing ourselves and trying to put into practice? I think that this race experience actually illuminates some things that we haven't necessarily talked about in a holistic way. We'll talk about a very specific, almost hyper-specific, too specific way. And that brings us to a Patreon listener question that I think can structure this. I'm curious about a question that maybe you have covered in earlier episodes. By way of brief background, I'm in my early 40s and have been training hard for about 3 years now for marathon races. During races, I usually consume about 6 to 8 science and sport gels and 4 to 6 salt tabs from Precision Hydration. One constant item I struggle with in marathons is maintaining my target pace or approximate target pace during miles 21 to 26. Usually my legs feel fairly broken at this point, and I'm not sure how to overcome the regression. I feel like no matter how many long runs of 16 to 20 miles I do, I still have this experience on race day. Do you have any specific training or nutrition advice to address the fatigue that miles 21 to 26 bring on race day?
Oh, I feel like this is the $1 million question of marathons.
I also think it's the $1 million question of training theory overall.
And oh yeah, for sure. I mean, this gets at the heart of fatigue resistance too.
Exactly.
Yes, yeah.
And that's why I wanted to highlight this, because this is a fatigue resistance question and I identify with this listener so damn much in my own journey. So for primer, if you haven't listened to episode 83, go back and listen to it. It's one of our deeper science dives that's all focused on fatigue resistance. But the general theory, it's also called durability in the literature, is it's how much output you have at the end of a certain amount of work. So usually it's framed as a couple thousand kilojoules of work. We can frame it as a couple hours, whatever you want to say. What can you do after that point? And that's what the listener's talking about with the wall that happens at mile 21 of a marathon, but it also happens in long ultras. It also happens in races like 10Ks. If you think about the last 5 minutes of that race versus the first five or 10 minutes. So this is something I've had to deal with because I fucking sucked at this for the longest time in my journey. Like my absolute performance potential, like my peak output was always pretty high, but the amount it would deteriorate was pretty substantial, much more than my peers on the trails.
But your fatigue resistance this weekend was outstanding.
Thank you.
In fact, so we've talked about on here all the time that Drew Holman is a fatigue resistance king. Like he is so, I think he's off the charts in fatigue resistance.
Probably one of the best one, two, or three in the world at that metric.
Yeah. Sure. And I'm so excited. He's still like pretty young in his ultra running career. And I'm so excited to see where that fatigue resistance goes. But you ran faster than Drew. Everyone, when I'm saying this, everyone knows that like Drew is king and you're also king too. But you ran faster than Drew at the Blue Sky Marathon this weekend.
Drew is king. I am jester. Let's be honest. I did a tempo with him at the end of a long run 2 weeks ago. And the whole time he's acting like he's suffering. And I like, meanwhile, he's gapping me by one step and then just coming back and like coughing and breathing.
Drew's the best.
Drew is the best. But at the very end of this race, you know, the time I made up on Drew's time at this race was in the last 2 miles.
Which is kind of unheard of for you.
Oh, it's absolutely unthinkable to the extent of like as of 5 years ago.
I mean, 99.9% of races, the time that you make up on people is in the first 4 miles.
Yeah.
Except and the 0.1% is this race.
Yeah. But it's been a slow change we talked about in the past. I think there's a bunch of different variables that go into this. The one that I have no control over is just age.
Yes.
That's a very productive thing. As we talked about, age is a massive opportunity because as every athlete ages, their type 1 slow twitch muscle fibers become more predominant. That's why basketball players and football players and baseball players actually have much earlier peaks than people think. They age out usually at like 28 or 30. They're at the peak or even a little past it. But for runners, we want those slow twitch fibers. So age for us, every year is an opportunity, you know? Like Leo, he hits 1 year old. I want him to be like, as soon as he's able to talk, ooh, mitochondria, baby, type 1 fibers.
Do you think age is also involved too in like the ability to think about and like the knowledge behind smart pacing? Because, okay, so when I see this question and when I think about your racing too, in order to do that close that you did, that, so you've raced this race previously and you beat your time from last year, which is really exciting. Also exciting too, because you're faster as a dad.
Yeah.
You were so skeptical about having a baby. I think some of that was tied into your like fitness and performance. And you know what? You got faster.
Megan, the main thing I structure my life on, it, like, you know, with children, they say it changes your life, all that. All I care about is how it changes my VO2 max.
Well, you know, if this changed your VO2 max, what would happen if we had a second?
I don't know, Megan. At this point, we might need 8.
Oh, I'm so behind that.
We might need an entire baseball team.
Yeah.
Go straight to the World Series with these fuckers.
Actually, when we had my cardiology appointment and my EKG was still showing pancreatitis, I was like, if I can't run in the future, can we just have 4 babies? And you kind of signed on to that.
No, I mean, what I said to you is if you can't run, you can have as many children as you'd like.
Oh, I'm so excited.
And dogs and goats.
And llamas.
Et cetera. And whatever's growing in the hot tub.
Yes. Oh, yeah. You have not properly cleaned the hot tub. And we have like a whole menagerie an ecosystem out there.
Yeah. It was so disappointing. So one of the secrets for me in this, we're going to jump around here. We're going to actually start with two little quick things before we get to caffeine. The first is pacing, as Megan said. We'll talk a little bit about that. The second is heat training.
Yes.
We've talked about year-round heat training, especially as we approach winter. Keep your blood volume gains. That has a huge impact on hemoglobin, as we talked about last week, and your ability to withstand higher temperatures at these events. It got pretty warm at the end. And I did that in the hot tub, so hot water submersion rather than sauna. You could also do it in hot bath. And so I was entering the hot tub every day, but I'd be in there and I'd be like, you know what? I should really treat this water. And then the hot tub is so relaxing and I would stay in there a pretty long time. So, you know, I would get the endorphins and I would get out and I would go just like put my head in my hands and just sit there and I'd forget about this. And so I forgot for long enough that we're doing an evolution experiment in our hot tub. Last night I got home after a few days of not using it, opened it up and was like, oh fuck, we got to drain this immediately.
We got a whole bunch of hot tub babies out there just cooking away.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So we're expanding the family, but hopefully they don't come and eat us in the middle of the night or something from our hot tub.
Okay. Well, my suggestion is I think you need to outsource this.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think we need to hire a hot tub guy or a hot tub person and they need to come and help you.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
So hot tub guys out there, you can reach out to us.
Okay. But can we get back to pacing?
Yes.
So I think this is important. So I think you pace this race really well because you came through a minute and a half through mile 9 slower than you had the previous year.
Yeah.
But then you closed so much faster. And as I'm thinking back to this question, about the marathon question about hitting the wall at mile 21 and doing that consistently, I'm wondering if there is like a reassessment of pacing that's needed. Because if this is continuously happening and like having the training in the legs, having the nutrition on board, like maybe we need to think about a different strategy of pacing.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts?
I totally agree. And the questioner, that probably is the first thing to think about.
Yes.
It's just pacing a little bit easier in the first 4 miles. Like it doesn't have to be the entire race even. But I think the aerobic system usually takes a minute to click on. There's a reason that we do warm-ups before workouts, let's say. Like 20 minutes is kind of a sweet spot for your body to fully activate. In these long races, it might be even a little longer. So I found that if you can control the pace and effort within the first 30 minutes, you're good. But if you push up toward lactate threshold, so Z4 in a 5-zone model, and what you're gonna see is that your body clicks on glycogen burning so high that it's really hard to come back from. And I think that that was a problem for me last year, probably. And this year I was able to avoid it. But even then, you know, I came through mile 9, my legs were kind of tired. So I was concerned about that. So, you know, I think it goes a little deeper than just becoming a little bit less of a dumb bitch. But there is a dumb bitch theorem that I do appreciate you bringing up.
Well, sometimes you got to go for it. And that's not being a dumb bitch. But if you go for it like 99.1% of the time and you don't have that fatigue resistance, like I feel like you need to experiment.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But okay. But can we get into what I think is the crux of where you want to go with this is caffeine.
Yes.
So after the race, you were hilarious. We really need a podcast recording after you've done a race because your brain is on fire with the amount of like between endorphins and caffeine. I feel like it creates this like synergistic element with your jokes. It's so good.
So we've been teeing this up for a bit, actually. Like I mentioned a few weeks ago that we were after Grindstone that I was going to be more intentional with my caffeine in everyday life because I noticed how much it's tied to my day-to-day mental health. Just like sitting around the couch and working and talking to you and playing with Leo.
Well, actually, before Grindstone, you decided to do a caffeine taper. And the day before the race, you did no caffeine. And when I talked to you, you were such a sad boy.
Yeah.
And it was really confusing to me. I was like, what's going on? But it goes to show the impact of caffeine on, and like the intersection between caffeine and mental health.
I wasn't a sad boy, Megan. I was a chill boy. I was a Matthew McConaughey boy.
Yeah.
I was all right. I wasn't like going for it. But this led us to digging in a little bit to this. Because what I did in the race, is before the race, I just had my normal caffeine. I think we recommend, if you're doing caffeine at all, just do a daily dose that's relatively small that you do every morning.
And what is your normal caffeine?
Tea, just like a cup of tea. I'm not sure the exact milligrams. Tea can vary a lot based on the source, but just black tea, probably 50 milligrams or something like that. It's not brewed too strong. But then during the race, I did 300 milligrams. And that was consisting of 3x100 milligram precision gels. I did the first one at probably 40 minutes mm-hmm. and then the second one at like hour 30, third one, like just over 2 hours. And the amount that was traced directly to changes in how I felt mm-hmm. was really interesting. And then at the end, the place that differed the most was one, my perceived exertion was zero. Like I never felt pain in that race, even when my heart rate was pretty high at the very, very end. And two, my motivation was sky high, which is something I actually struggle with interestingly in races sometimes. I'm like, well, why does it matter if I get to like push this extra 5 seconds or whatever? Like it just didn't to me usually. And caffeine makes me want to dominate the world. Yeah. It makes me a high testosterone monster. I don't know what the fuck's going on.
Do you think it has to do with the dose of caffeine? So yeah. I think the interesting thing about precision is that it's 100 milligrams, whereas like typically for me, I generally take like smaller quantities at a time, like 35 milligrams. Do you think like the larger bolus of caffeine all at once hits you in a different way?
Yeah. I'm all about those large boluses.
Gotta get those boluses.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think it does matter. And I think there's a reason Precision does 100 milligrams. So actually, if you're interested, go to Precision Hydration's website, use code SWAP, S-W-A-P, for 15% off. That's just neither here nor there. I just really like their shit. But the caffeine that they do, those big hits, does seem to be good for me, but you need to be careful because how much can you balance that? And that brings us to some of the science here. The first is a general overview that came out in the International Society of Sports Nutrition. They took a precision stand on caffeine and exercise performance, and it basically found what you probably expect. Caffeine is a performance enhancer. It's probably one of the strongest performance enhancers that is legal. Why it's legal when other things aren't is an interesting question, actually, because it's so beneficial.
Well, I think it'd be so hard to regulate. We need to tell everyone not to drink. Like, I mean, you could go by like dose and amount, but then I feel like that gets so tricky with athletes trying to titrate. Yeah. So I think it actually makes sense that it's legal.
Oh, no, it totally makes sense. Yes, I guess my question is, you know, sometimes like caffeine also comes with risks if you take high doses for your body.
Oh, for sure.
Much like certain types of performance enhancers would come with risks. So there's a lot of things there that are, it's just an interesting idea. But what they're seeing is often 2-3% performance increases from caffeine intake, which is pretty interesting. So in the paper, they recommended 3-6 milligrams per kilogram of body weight, 60 minutes pre-exercise. That's actually more than I took pre-race.
That's actually a lot of caffeine.
Yeah, it's quite a lot.
Yeah.
But I think that gets back to some of the difficulty of actually measuring this. So when they're measuring this, they're usually saying, hey, athlete, take this amount of caffeine, then go exercise. They're not saying, hey, athlete, take this amount of caffeine, go exercise, then titrate in different amounts over the course of 3 hours or 6 hours or 10 hours, and then we'll find out what happens. Because then too many variables come in, you can't control it. So caffeine is one of those places where I think you need to find what works for you very specifically, because the studies have some inadequacies when we get to the margins of how they're actually, you know, dosing these athletes and just the limitations of lab studies in general.
And these, like, it's so individual how an athlete processes and metabolizes caffeine anyways. So over 95% of the caffeine is actually metabolized in the liver by a cytochrome P450 enzyme. And there's so much genetic variation in how athletes process that. And there's fast metabolizers and slow metabolizers. And I feel like the best way to find out what you are is just to do trial and error.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, I have my genetic results. I'm like an intermediate metabolizer, but it hasn't changed what I've done. Like, I just go by feel and what makes a lot of sense. But for me, actually, I feel like I'm a little bit more sensitive, and whether that's genetic component or like, you know, some other component
or heart or
like
autoimmune
trait or like some part of me, I'm not sure, but I take low doses. But what I was interested is that the position stand, I think it's so funny that you can have a position stand on caffeine, by the way.
Yeah.
It's like, we're going to take a position stand on caffeine.
Yeah. There's been a lot of position stands recently by these big organizations.
Yeah. It sounds very formal.
It also sounds like it's more controversial than it is. It's like, it's not controversial to say caffeine helps some people.
Yeah, exactly.
And it doesn't help other people.
Yeah. But anyway, the minimal effective dose that they found was actually 2 milligrams per kilogram of body mass, which is higher than I was expecting. Because like for me, say I'm like 50 kilos, that's like 100 milligrams, which is actually a lot of caffeine. Like I think the tea that I have is like probably like 60 milligrams, you know?
But I think the problem is it just gets into the point. We can't measure specific data points.
Yes.
And we can't measure how you're taking it during the activity.
And also different types of caffeine sources are metabolized in different ways. Yeah. And so, you know, like the pharmacokinetics of, essentially of different types of caffeine sources are very different. And so like you kind of have to play around, like what's the difference between like a Coca-Cola and a Precision and tea and coffee? And it might vary in terms of like processing time.
And timing.
Yes.
So for me, same thing, got a genetic test, basically ignored it because I was like, well, when you actually look at how they calculate these genetic tests, they're essentially taking what people do and then backfilling it onto their genetic code. So it's not necessarily saying we know exactly what these genes do and we're exactly mapping your milligrams onto it. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit more dicey than that. And what I found is that if I take a lot before exercise, what it actually does is raise my heart rate a ton.
Oh yeah.
And meanwhile, if
and
I
then
take-
And then it doesn't, I feel like then it's like a runaway train.
And I have problems controlling my heart rate and my effort and my burn rate. Whereas if I take it during exercise, that's when I find it doesn't cause the heart rate issue and I get such a better benefit from it. Mm-hmm. So that's the way I do. And I, you know, I think that gets back to just, you need to understand it, but you also need to understand the performance improvement matters. So like if we're looking at 2 to 3% performance improvement, compare that to something that was legal and isn't going to be in 2024. So tramadol, which is, I heard it called as an opiate light, but essentially it's a painkiller.
Yes.
Cyclists have taken in the Pro Peloton forever. It's really nasty shit and we would never say anyone should take it, but it's banned now starting in 2024 because a study that came out this year that found a 1.3% faster time. In other words, way less than caffeine and they're banning it. So, you know, caffeine matters. On the contrasting side, the two top marathoners in the US right now, Connor Mance and Clayne Young, I believe, they're Mormon. And I assume, I don't know what their caffeine habits are, but you know, in general, Mormons aren't taking caffeine. So, you know, you don't know exactly what people are doing. It's not necessary, but thinking about it just a little bit seems to matter. Because one of the interesting things about caffeine is it works in all levels of runners. It's not just beginner runners that see benefit. A 2023 review came out on Nutrients that said everybody sees benefit. Women see benefit. Men see benefit. It's just benefit across the board.
Well, I think it's benefit across the board when you look at like aggregate data.
Yeah.
But when you zoom into individual data points, I think the challenge is there are slow metabolizers of caffeine and the side effects might outweigh the performance gains. And there have been studies that show that some people actually get negatively impacted by caffeine. And I thought it was curious. There was an article that said like 75% of endurance athletes use caffeine. And I wonder if the other 25% are people that have are slow metabolizers that have self-selected and are like, oh, this doesn't work for me. And so while yes, there are like 2 to 3% performance gains, it's not for everyone. That's hard.
And I mean, it's so true. Like I was thinking back to a few episodes ago, mentioned that we had started coffee again. We just briefly said it.
Oh, that lasted like 5 days.
Yeah. You know what started to happen?
What?
I just felt, I think PVCs.
Yeah.
So premature ventricular or whatever contractions in my heart, I felt them from the coffee. And, you know, meanwhile, I'm taking 300 milligrams in a race and feeling great and wonderful. And my numbers respond awesomely. So clearly there's some genetic component there because my dad can't do coffee either. Mm-hmm. So, you know, also it made me feel like you're a hypocrite because I'm like, oh, I have these PVCs. I'm going to go run. You know, I'm like, Megan, your heart hurts. Never run again, ever the rest of your life. Let's just have 47 children if that's what you want.
47 children, I might consider it. Yeah, that's a fair trade-off. But no, I do think it's hard though, because I think if we're talking about caffeine, there's a 2 to 3% performance advantage, but some people don't get that. It's kind of hard. It's almost like the doping discussion of like some people respond to substances better than others. Yeah. And I don't know, my heart kind of aches for people that don't respond to caffeine.
Yeah. Oh man, that would be a tough life.
Right? Yeah.
How do you get out of bed in the morning? Yeah. How do you go on? It's so difficult. But a couple more things that are really interesting. Caffeine not only improves performance generally, but it also improves performance by way more when mental fatigue is introduced. A study came out this year that found a 14% increase in improvement in performance under states of fatigue. And that's kind of the life of stressed out people or people that have busy lives. And maybe that's what I felt during the race is that it just cleared out my mental fatigue. I had none of the issues with ankle sprains. I was so light and perfect on my feet ever since I took that caffeine. So maybe that was my secret all along to these chonky cankles.
And I like the study actually too, because they pointed out, they felt like a mediator in that was actually mood.
Yeah.
So athletes that were consuming caffeine in these states of mental fatigue actually had stronger mood as well. And I love the connection between like mood and performance. And it's kind of fascinating to think about how that works with caffeine.
And that might be the main source here.
Like, oh yeah. You're just hyped.
Yeah. You're just hyped.
You're feeling beefy.
It reduces perceived exertion.
Yeah.
And if there's anything that Spot Podcast is all about, is anything that reduces perceived exertion is a beneficial intervention. It's why we're fans of using music in your training. Though I asked you if I could use it during my race and you said no.
Mostly because I was like, you don't want pictures with headphones in them. Also, it's a marathon. I was like, okay, if this is like 100K, you can use music. Yeah. But like for a marathon, you can suck it up.
I feel like you almost divorced me. When I said I was going to wear a little, like, you know,
no,
headphones out there. I thought you didn't like that very much.
I don't mind it. But like you're passing. So in this race, the half marathon and the marathon intersected.
You
like,
didn't know that at the time.
Oh, I knew that.
Yeah, you knew it. You see, I'm sure you looked at the race website.
I dream boarded it.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, exactly.
You intersected like 3 or 4 times. It's like, you need to have the mental capacity to say huzzah.
Yeah. Okay. So Precision Hydration actually has a lot of great info on their website about this. Some of the big things to understand is that it takes about 15 minutes for absorption and levels peak 45 to 60 minutes after. So if you're like dosing it during a race or whatever, taking it at a point when you're really looking for that boost 30 minutes later is kind of where I like to hit it.
But caffeine actually does have a long tail to it. So like actually the half-life is 4 to 5 hours, yeah, which is much longer than I always conceptualized that being. And then going to show the individual variation, the range on that is 1.5 to 9 hours.
Holy shit.
Can you imagine if you're an athlete that has a half-life of 9 hours for caffeine? So for context, like half-life is the amount of time it takes for the body to reduce a substance by half the original amount. So you'd still be seeing caffeine in your body at like 16 hours at that
and
point.
And that's where it gets complicated with sleep and things like that.
Yes.
And why I suggest the baseline dose, if you're the type of person that is not a super slow metabolizer, followed by like putting it into your body when you need it and when you're going to use it in the AM,
yes,
not necessarily doing it for PM workouts or anything like that. And not just doing high doses every day. Like you still want to maintain your ability to use these doses. So like for me, it's races, it's long runs. Those are the two places I need it most, much less in workouts even. Like, those are basically the two places I add extra. But generally be careful with putting in too much. And, you know, some studies find that over 200 to 400 milligrams is getting into maybe unsafe levels for some people. Like there are some anecdotes about this. So this is where genetics interact with, you know, health advice. So be careful there.
And there's a lot of like science, there's tons of research on caffeine. Hell, there's even like a position stand on caffeine, which I still find hilarious. But there's actually the research in women is lacking, and then research in ultra runners too, because you're running a 24 hour race, and apparently like, you know, you think about 200 to 400 milligrams of caffeine is like a safe amount, but how do you change that? I mean, a marathon is just a very different setup than a 24 hour race. How do you counsel athletes if they're racing a 100 mile race?
How much would you guess that some athletes have taken in championship 100 milers?
Oh my God, bonkers levels. I mean, I would say in the thousands.
Yes.
Yeah.
Easily.
Yeah.
It reminds me actually of Dave Grohl, Foo Fighters fame. There's an amazing YouTube video that just shows him drinking coffee. And I think he got up to, you know, tens of thousands of milligrams per day, so, but he didn't die.
It's probably also, this is the point too, his body also probably adapted to it as well. So yeah.
So I think it's very highly individual. I would suggest athletes never go over like 500 or 600, even in really, really long events. You just use it more strategically.
Yes.
Yeah. Even in multi-day events, use it strategically. Like, don't overdo it, because your heart matters and you need to understand your body and probe the limits before you just like dose a ton.
Yeah.
And similarly, like 300 milligrams in a race is probably too much, unless you've also already done 100, already done 200, and then moved up to 300, which I'd done in long runs before this one. So I'm going to use it a lot more strategically. I think it is to attribute for the fatigue resistance change, along with some of the other spicy things we're about to get to.
I love it, the spice. I think just be careful. If you have the poops, caffeine might be a contributor to that. So I've seen that in some athletes. And then for long ultras, I typically say like, sometimes wait to like 8, 10 hours in, and then like look forward to it. Like look forward to that boost in mood. But yeah, definitely be careful with it.
And I used to do that too, based on the research.
Yeah.
And I started to say a couple hours in, get that sweet, sweet nectar, just because the race unfolds at that point still.
That's a good point. Yeah.
It does help feel, I think, again.
I mean, it depends on how long the race is.
Yeah.
You know, if an athlete's gonna be out there for 24 hours, I think, you know, 4 hours is very different than a 16-hour 100. Yeah.
True. So true. So speaking of poop, which could be a good podcast, alternative podcast name for this thing. So during the race, actually, I had to stop to use the bathroom once. And as I'm coming to the finish line and I see this clock and I know the historic course record and I'm just counting down the seconds, pushing as hard as I can. When you saw me, I'm like, if I miss this CR by one poop, I'd be so frustrated with myself. But I didn't. And guess how long the poop took me? I used the Strava calculator to see how much the little bar went up relative to my competitors.
It's an outstanding use of the Strava calculator.
Yes. Guess how many seconds it took?
4.5.
Six. But close enough.
Yeah, that's actually, it's a PR for you. Yeah. I think I'm more in like the 4.5 range. You're more in like a 6 range.
I'm moving there, Megan.
Yes, you're getting there.
Every year is an opportunity to catch your numbers.
Okay, can we come back to the shorts situation though? Did this contribute to your shorts, general shorts situation going on?
I don't know if the color was right there. What do you think's coming out my butt?
I mean, maybe it was just like spreading all around there. It's mostly on your front.
Maybe. It's possible. But yeah, and another reminder, this is a little side note. If you have to go to the bathroom during a race, you can make it quick and informal.
Okay, people are going to hate on you for that.
Why?
Because there's going to be poop all over the trails.
No, I went to a bathroom.
In 4.5 seconds?
I did, Megan. I not only went to the bathroom. I got there and I put toilet paper down over the seat.
You made a heart with it. Yeah. You wrote a note.
No, I wrote a note and left a tip.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
For the park rangers and all of that.
It's like the Appalachian Trail. You're just leaving a detailed description of your journey and your poop and existence.
Exactly. The rangers investigate me like they investigate the wolves in Yellowstone. That's me. Okay, next up is fueling. You know we're broken records on this. We won't spend too long on it. But I was about 400 calories per hour. That was in between sports drink, which they just had on course, mixed with what you gave me, Precisions, and then a little bit of Science and Sport Beta Fuel, which is like a thinner gel that helped me get a lot in. So combining all that all, it just kept things coming, which was really, really helpful. Make sure you're getting plenty of calories in.
And what were you doing pre-race? So recently you've had a much stronger commitment to fueling before you run, and This makes my heart sing, especially too, because like we trade off. Usually I run pretty early in the morning and you come after. And so you've had this like longer period of time. So what did you have pre-race?
I've been loading up that oatmeal, baby.
Yeah.
Well, so I heard Kipchoge before the Berlin Marathon, when he ran a really fast time, they asked what he ate in his Quaker instant oatmeal. And then it validated everything I've always wanted to do, which is just go to town on some fucking oats. So that's what I did. And I've been doing that a lot more recently, is trying to get bigger breakfasts. And, you know, you can preach this stuff, but still it always made me uncomfortable because of the bathroom break type of situation. And I found that actually it seems to correlate with fewer bathroom breaks. And I don't know why exactly that would be. For me, maybe it's just like timing or whatever, but it seems like it's been helpful.
Well, your GI system has budding fatigue resistance that it never had before. But the night before the race, we were talking about this oatmeal and you told me you were going to eat Cinnamon Toast Crunch oatmeal. I was like, I'm not sure that's what Kipchoge had.
A listener sent that in, and that was probably a good idea. I didn't do that. I ended up just having a Clif Bar before the race, but I've been having oatmeal every day and that prepared me for the Clif Bar. And the Clif Bars, they are just oats, so.
That's actually a good point. They're fancy oats. Yeah. Well, I had, this morning I had Kodiak Cakes oatmeal, which was delicious and has 14 grams of protein. But you know what? It was like, I don't know, it was like a 230 calorie oatmeal or whatever. It had like nothing in there.
Yeah.
I was like, I must eat so much oatmeal.
I need my 800 calorie oatmeal.
I was like, I need 12 of these to feel like I've had a breakfast.
Bring me the boluses.
But it's actually, I mean, I feel like if you're doing a quick turnaround, the Kodiak Cakes oatmeal is actually probably a great option.
Yeah, or any of the instant oatmeal is, I think, one of the ideal pre-exercise nutrition options. But here's a quick interesting question from Patreon. I have a question on fueling during shorter races. Yesterday, I raced a half marathon. It was a local race, and I found myself in a two-person race for the win. I eventually came second by a little. I took on 3 gels in the 1 hour, 40 minutes it took us to get around. Every time I took a gel, though, a small gap opened that I found hard work to close. The person who won didn't take on anything. Did I fuel too often? I have raced a lot, so I don't think it's the case of practicing. If I hadn't fueled, the gap may have been even bigger. Interested to hear your thoughts fueling these shorter races. This is a great question. Basically, if you're doing a race that's under a couple hours, I would say a gel every 30 minutes is good.
Yes.
And it shouldn't be slowing you down like this. Just make sure you practice in training slurping. Like
I was just going to say, practice a slurp.
Yeah, dial it in.
Yeah.
Fueling should be like so second nature from so much practice that it's just easy. And for me, you know, I've been practicing with this waist belt so much that I'm just in, out, boom, slurp, jizz everywhere. It's great.
And play around with textures. Like if you can't slurp one texture, try something that's more liquidy, like play around with the nature of the textures. And sometimes athletes that can't actually do this at speed, I have them progress. Yeah. So I'm like, let's start at a fast walk. Let's progress to a run. Let's do this on a stride. And I feel like practicing it in training is super helpful.
You practice fueling on strides sometimes?
I have had athletes do that. And you know what? It's worked. I don't know how we haven't talked about this before.
Megan, you're a brilliant mad scientist.
Oh, I thought you were going to come at me and be like, that's weird.
No, that's the coolest thing I ever heard.
Yeah.
This listener, that's your answer.
Yeah, practice it on strides.
Holy shit.
We haven't talked about this before.
I don't
actually
know.
I've told this to a few people now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm the last to know.
Yeah.
I need to search through your phone.
But it's actually good though too, because you're taking it at effort.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, but you're not taking it at so much effort that like, I feel like you're building towards racing effort as you're doing that. Yeah.
I love it so much. Okay. So I'm not going to talk about hydration, but I took in 6 bottles. Quick thing that you can do is if you're using a waist belt, you can just store a bottle in the back if it's tight enough. And I didn't notice it bouncing around. And then I would just drink most of my water at once. So I had my hands free. It seemed to really help my technical proficiency. There was miles in this course that were wildly technical. And with my hands free, I felt so much more stable. So maybe this is a sign that I should have been wearing a pack all along.
You knew where my brain was going. I'm like slowly pushing the pack inertia.
Yeah, but think about that.
Okay, question for you though.
Yes.
Sipping versus slurping. I'm a sipper, you're a slurper. In terms of you get a lot more, you take like one gulp all at once.
Yeah.
Well, I'm like sipping it slowly. Do you think there's one that has a performance like gain or GI system gain compared to the other?
I think slurping, maybe this is biased, but I think the reason is because after a while, you're having to change your breathing pattern to slurp a lot.
Yes.
Just with swallowing and stuff. And I run with you and you have to.
Yeah.
And that's relevant. Like the more you can take in at once and train yourself to, I think the better. And if you look at the marathoners like Kipchoge, they'll take in a lot of their bottle and then toss it.
Oh, all at once. Yeah.
You know, or as much as they can.
Yeah.
And I think that's relevant. You don't see them carrying a bottle for 3 miles.
Well, also they're going so fast. I imagine that would actually hinder performance and speed.
Yeah. But it might also have something to just do with our backgrounds. Like,
yes, yeah.
You know, when I was like in first grade, I was slurping down a lot of food all the time. So just me, I'm a pro at slurping. Yeah. If you want me to eat a cheeseburger in 5 seconds, well, you know, so no one sees me like snarfing it down then and call me names, that's, I'm your man.
Just not in the morning, it's before you run.
Yes.
That's a very focused time where you're sipping.
Okay, let's get into some really wild stuff, right?
Ooh, I'm excited.
So this is really interesting. This is on ketones post-exercise. So now we're starting to probe the limits of some scientific understanding, and we're going to have an unsatisfying answer for at the end of this discussion. But we want to be on the cutting edge, and we want you to be on the cutting edge even when we're unsure. So what I started doing after Grindstone, based on some research that we read, is exogenous ketones, which are just little, you know, shots of things. I was taking HVMN personally, who they actually reached out for sponsorship and we turned them down.
Oh, I feel uncomfortable with that.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel mildly uncomfortable with you taking ketones because, I mean, they're totally legal, but I'm just like, there's not a lot of science on there and not a lot of research. But
yeah.
I mean, the research is coalescing and I do think there's like some performance benefit to
perhaps.
It. So I'm trying to learn. Yes.
Perhaps. And that's, we're always trying to learn. And that's the main reason I want to try it, is to see what there is. So I've been taking it post-exercise, not during or before. So as a reminder, I have tried it during. These things have been taken in the professional biking peloton for a while, and had one of the worst experiences of my entire life both times I did it.
Well, both times you did it, I get this text at like mile 16 of a run. I'm walking all the way home. You had like 8 miles left to go.
Lights out.
Yeah.
Like totally out, which doesn't happen to me. I the way it accelerated like a pure bonk was really strange. And I was like, I'm never going to try this again before or during activity. It's not worth it for me. I don't understand why this happened. And anything that does that to my body makes me nervous. But based on some of the studies we're going to talk about, I started taking post-exercise, and not to say it caused any change, but it does coincide with me feeling really good fatigue resistance-wise for the first time in a race like this.
So, as does our hot tub ecosystem.
That's true.
Which one do you think is more relevant?
The hot tub.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
And that gets back to—
Babies, always more relevant.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, for sure. You know, being a dad probably does improve fatigue resistance. And it gets back to why it's so hard to isolate variables, why all of these studies are limited in their you know, ability to be relevant for individuals. But one study we're not going to get into in great detail that we talked about before is that a study came out this year that found ketones post-exercise can increase EPO production in the body. It was from 7.5 millimoles or whatever to 9 in the ketone group. So that's a pretty big increase. Natural EPO levels will increase your hemoglobin levels, improve oxygen carrying capacity, all the things we like. So that's more of a long-term consideration here that might be playing a role.
And yes, those are all the things we like, but it's literally one variable.
Yeah.
And my question also too, is there compensation in other variables? Like how does that, I have many, many questions.
And why is it happening?
Why is it happening? Exactly. Like,
so they don't know.
Yeah.
If it's happening via HIF, so the hypoxia inducible factor, this could actually be negative because it could be preventing adaptation in certain ways or a huge stress on the body.
Yes. Yeah.
We don't know.
Cause that's one variable in a stew of like thousands and thousands and thousands of variables. And just because that variable is improving, like, is it turning down other things that we want to gain, you know?
Yeah. And what led to my personal intervention was finding a 2019 study in the Journal of Physiology. Its title was Ketone Ester Supplementation Blunts Overreaching Symptoms During Endurance Training Overload. So the basic structure here is it was 6 days a week of two-a-days, just male athletes. That's very significant. And there was a ketone group and a control group. So the ketone group took ketones after exercise. What they found is that after week three, the sustainable training load was much better for the ketone-treated athletes, and they improved their time trial at the end of a two-hour standardized test. Mm-hmm. So in other words, their fatigue resistance by 15%. So that's complicated because this study had its limitations. In fact, one of the only studies I've ever seen with a paper, a letter to the editor that was released insulting it.
Oh, that happens all the time in research. Okay. Yes.
Well, I don't read these.
It happens in Twitter. It happens like formally in letters to the editor, but this was a pretty baller letter to the editor.
I don't read the journals front to back like you do.
Oh, it's kind of fun. This is like, sometimes I feel like it's really fun to just like swirl in controversy from afar.
Oh my God.
It's really fun to read papers and the letter to editors, but it does give me minor anxiety because I publish and it's like, oh shit.
Yeah. Oh, this thing scared me. It reminded me like, I don't know, Britney and Christina back in the early 2000s or something. I'm trying to think of other beefs. Eminem and Machine Gun Kelly.
Oh, shoot.
Beefs. Like that type of beef.
Yeah, that's a good beef.
I was going to say Biggie and Tupac, but that didn't end well. So
yeah, maybe. That type of beef.
Yeah. Though they did arrest Tupac's killer. Did you hear that?
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Wow.
News for the day.
Yeah, that's an interesting way to get to news.
So what the contrasting paper said is that the between group differences were unfounded because they didn't do these trials before and after. So they were essentially just seeing if they had selection bias within each group, they could have been finding unfounded things. Similarly, their mechanisms for overreaching might not have been the actual cause.
Well, it seems like the athletes weren't actually like in a state of non-functional overreaching.
Yeah.
And that was actually pretty evident because they didn't show long-term performance decrements. And they also didn't show the individual data points too when they were like highlighting this. And so a lot of challenges with this paper, but it does, I mean, it overlaps anecdotally with what we've seen with athletes using ketones. And so I don't know. I think we have some evidence to believe it, but I think the mechanisms are still super unclear.
And the jury is still so out.
Yes,
we have no idea on female athletes at this point at all. It could be extremely negative. Please don't try it without someone that works in this field telling you to, or you're sure it's going to work for you. During exercise, unfounded, really, we just don't know. In fact, saw a study that came out just this year that found time trial performance in advanced cyclists that take it before exercise decreased by 2.5%.
Which is a lot.
That's a huge amount.
That's like a ton.
Insane.
Well, it makes sense. It's like the equivalent of you walking back in your long runs.
Yeah. And so we just don't know. But we also, what we're going to do in the future is monitor this area of science. I'm probably going to write on it soon with Megan's help and figure out what exactly the cutting edge is here. Because my guess is if we went into the physiology department of one of these expensive cycling teams like Ineos.
Yes, yeah.
Or Jumbo Visma, which is going to change their name actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, Jumbo Visma is like my favorite name.
Jumbo is no longer in it.
Oh, man. So it's just Visma? It's called, Little Visma?
It's called Visma Rent-A-Bike.
Oh, that's the worst.
Isn't it the worst?
That's so weird.
It's so sad.
They can't even buy a bike? No. Oh, they could buy so many bikes.
It lacks the beef.
It does. It totally does.
No beefies.
That's really sad.
But I bet if we went into those physiology departments, we would find what they're doing and it would be so fascinating.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
But who knows? For now, pay attention. We'll keep you updated.
Actually, and my question to you is if you go into the rental bike physiology departments, you're probably going to find a lot of stuff that has like corollaries to medicine and health. And this is actually one area like ketones have really been studied just in relation to exercise physiology and performance. But my mind goes to a bunch of places in like health and disease actually that might benefit from this. So
or
I'm curious about that too.
Not benefit.
Yes, that's true. Yes. Yeah.
And that's the problem with this. And so be careful because we don't know the lines of causation. A lot of these studies theorize things and then say, we don't know.
Yeah.
Anytime that happens, just careful. There could be tumors around the corner. Yeah. You could be having what's growing in the hot tub growing on your pancreas. Okay, next up is a study on shoe wear. This one is fascinating that we just wanted to mention briefly. It's called The Influence of Different Midsole Foams in Advanced Footwear Technology Use on Running Economy and Biomechanics in Trained Runners. This just came out last week. This changed my understanding of shoes, which is incredibly relevant, I think, to anyone that's making decisions about what shoes to buy and when, how often to buy them.
Also, unlike the last study that we talked about, extremely well-executed study.
Yes.
Actually, you texted it to me one morning at 5 a.m. and I received it in bed and I was looking at this and I was like, this is going to blow up.
Yeah.
And what do you know, actually, I feel like it's been really trending on like in exercise physiology and biomechanics world. And so it's a very cool study.
It's our equivalent of an intellectual morning erection.
Oh, exactly.
These studies just getting sent.
Instead of morning wood, it's morning Evo.
Yeah. That's so perfect. Different material.
Different material, but same properties, kind of.
Kind of.
Yes.
Well, no, Eva doesn't wear down.
That's true.
Very much. The wood does very quickly. Okay. So it took 22 male runners. It had 4 trials and a random crossover design. So every athlete was getting every trial to even out the different approaches. All prototypes were from On Running, the brand, which is very cool. They made them for this study. Amazing that On is doing this. Fuck yes, On. It makes me want to support that company more.
And so what they did was they had athletes in a pair of fresh Piba shoes and fresh Eva shoes. And then...
So we're going to... Eva and Piba sound very similar to our listeners.
Oh, true. Actually, we need to enunciate.
So Eva, E-V-A, is kind of the older foam that you might know that's a little bit firmer. It's in what was in most traditional shoes over the last 5 years or so. Piba, P-Bax, P-E-B-A, is kind of what's in the Nike super shoes, that kind of softer foam, ZoomX, stuff like that. Piba, P-Bax, is always considered the faster foam. That's always what I assumed. And this study kind of indicates that, except in the worn conditions. So the other parts they tested were worn conditions for both shoes after 450 kilometers of use.
Which is like 280 miles, I think. So you would expect, I mean, these shoes, like super shoes, don't often have a huge timeline. Like a lot of the new super shoes that come out say like 5 marathons.
Yeah.
And so it's curious to think about what happens in that model of wear.
And I mean, the new Adidas shoes say 1.
Yeah.
It's insane, right? And as they've looked at these shoes, the reason they wanted to do this study is that some of the other studies have indicated it's not the carbon plate that makes these shoes fast. It's the foam interacting with the carbon plate. So the foam itself is the most important element. So they wanted to look at, well, how does the foam actually impact this over time? And the results were just bonkers.
And what they found was that the fresh Piba was actually better than the Eva by about 2%. And so that kind of relates to what we've seen in general literature that parallels it. But this was fascinating, is that the Piba decayed over time with wear. So it decayed by about 2.28% in terms of performance gains compared to the Eva, which actually had a slight increase in performance gains over time.
Yeah. Not significant improvement in the Eva shoes.
Which is wild. Why do you think that is?
Probably just the density of the material.
Yeah.
So the, you know, Piba, the more advanced foam, is very soft.
Very compressible. Yes.
Yeah. And over time, you just imagine soft foam just gets a little bit worn down. I imagine this is even more substantial if you don't have a carbon plate or a plate in there to give the foam some structure. So be careful with those Piba shoes that don't have a plate, which is some on the market. We don't want to name any by names. But the Eva shoes, like I wore this weekend, a Hoka Tecton X2 is Eva. They're already firm, and so perhaps there's just some, I mean, the study is probably just saying they don't decay at all. There's probably some, the foot wears into the model, it makes the interaction of the plate and the foam a little bit more efficient, or we might just be seeing a study relic that's not that relevant. Because one of the things, when you look at the data, I mean, you were pointing out some really fascinating things to me this morning.
Oh, yeah. When you look at the individual data points, there's definitely a trend where you can see with the Piba, there is this like nice decline across most points, but not all points.
Yeah.
And same with the Eva is like, you know, it's kind of neutral, but there are some points that are increasing. You just wonder if that's like a variation in, you know, test design. And, you know, if we rolled out 100 more tests, would we see the same thing? But I think that the trends are clear and you can see that in the statistical methods too.
Yeah. The variable responses in that are wild. And it gets back to why it's like, whenever we mention studies, take it all with a grain of salt. Always go back to what people actually do.
Because
when you look at this study, the authors were awesome because they understand this. And what they did is they showed the before and after for each data point. And then the trend line over top of it. So there was no hiding for these authors.
Oh yeah, full transparency in data points, which is great.
But it also showed there were some people that totally bucked the trend and went the total opposite direction in huge ways. And I have no idea how that would happen other than the athlete was more motivated on like one or two of the sets or something.
Oh, which happens. I mean, that happens. Like think about like random shit might happen. Like you might pull a hamstring or like, you know, any number of variables that can happen.
And this was submaximal. So maybe at certain times they just had like more GI distress. Who knows? But it points out that, you know, got to be careful. But when you're buying these shoes, the Eva foams, which are a little bit usually less expensive and things like, you know, the Tecton, probably last longer than I thought they did.
Yeah.
And I'm excited about that because I felt that. I've been like, this feels like it lasts a long time, but the studies say super shoes don't, so maybe that's a problem. In reality, they probably do. Piba foams, they don't last as long, but they still probably last longer than the shoe companies have been telling us. So pay attention to that too. You might not need to buy quite as many new ones as they've been leading us to believe.
Well, we just took about 12 pairs of Hoka Tectons to Goodwill. Yeah. Maybe you shouldn't have taken them. Like, maybe they had some more shelf life on them.
That's true.
Someone at Goodwill is going to be running around real fast.
Well, they upgraded to the twos. Those were old ones.
That's true, actually. Yeah, you had to have the twos. Okay, but one question I have on this too is this generalizable? So the Eva and Piba shoes that they used from On Running were actually different shoe models.
Yeah.
And so they were the similar, like they had similar midsole dimensions. And so you would think would be similar, but is it just a change in like two different models that we're seeing? And so I would love to see this study replicated across multiple different types of Eva and Piba shoes.
And let's get the Nikes out there. You know, let's get the big hitters. Like
On's a big hitter.
On's a big hitter for
Their
sure.
Their shoes are sexy.
Megan, if you had to choose between an On super shoe and a Nike super shoe, as much as we love On.
Very true.
What would you choose?
Duh, Nike. Yeah.
You know, whenever we say that, we get interesting emails.
Oh yeah, people don't like Nike, which is totally fair. Yeah.
And to reiterate, like at least my general feeling on this, it's that anytime that companies or people have negative histories, you give them some room to grow. Nike has been trying to make strides in everything from their contracts to, you know, their production practices and things like that.
In a very roller coaster kind of way.
Definitely.
Yes. Yeah.
And so with that in mind, like we don't blanket, like cancel a company as long as they're demonstrating that they want to improve.
It's also harder to cancel when there's a 5% gain.
That's true.
I mean, let's be real.
Okay. You just caught me in a bind. I don't feel very beefy right now. My beef levels are low.
Your beef levels are at Piba.
Okay.
I'll warn Piba.
Let's get to some news. We can jump around, do some of these quick, some of them not, or not talk about them at all.
Let's do them. Okay. And then guess what?
What?
I think we're going to miss Reds again. And then we'll get to hot takes on the listener corner.
Reds.
It's coming.
It's coming.
Yeah.
Summary.
We've had so much foreplay.
Eat a fuck ton. Eat so much.
Yeah.
Like, it's so important. It just really matters for your growth. You know, be careful. Talk to your doctor. But at the same time, eat enough.
Eat like 12 of the Kodiak oatmeals, please.
Yeah. It's like, oh my God. I mean, yeah, it's so important. Okay. Number one, continuous lactate monitoring is on the way.
I'm so excited about this. And we actually spent almost an entire walk talking about this.
Yeah.
What do you think? Like, okay, I'm just excited to nerd out over this data.
Yeah.
But do you think it's actually going to have like, I feel like we've seen so much performance gain in like road marathoning and ultras. Do you think it's going to take us the next leap in terms of performance gains?
Great question. And I think the best way to answer it is to take a step back. So we have continuous glucose monitors now that everyone has seen. They were developed first for like insulin, you know, things like that, like diabetes patients, and have been applied to athletes. They were even banned by the UCI in cycling because of some of the information they thought they could give that give continuous glucose monitoring.
Well, I also wonder if they thought there could be continuous lactate monitors in there and that's why they banned them.
Maybe.
Like if it wasn't for like, to me, like continuous glucose actually would be like having that information real time and having a physiologist analyze it and then shoot you back some information in a radio would be helpful. But I wonder if they thought that they were monitoring for more.
Maybe. But either way, I feel like the CGMs haven't necessarily been that beneficial.
Oh, yeah, because they give so much data. And it's like, what do you do with this? And I feel like it's so individual. And it's unless you have a physiology watching it at all times, like a physiologist or nutritionist watching it at all times, it's really hard to know what to do with.
And even then, from what I understand, it's just not that beneficial use day to day. I think continuous lactate monitors might be subject to the same type of thing in the sense that when I heard about CGMs, the glucose monitors, I had my nerd boner, right?
I was like,
this is so exciting.
Your nerd Piba? Your nerd Piba? Or your nerd Eva? You can choose.
Nerd Eva. I want to last a while.
Yeah.
but I was so excited because I was like, oh, this will clearly be beneficial, right? And it wasn't. I think continuous lactate monitors, they seem different, but I do want to check that bias. And that's why the history is relevant.
Oh, they seem so different to me.
Yeah. And I think the way they're going to be used will be game changing because what athletes are going to really understand is that everything we talk about with heart rate might not necessarily be what's happening in the physiology. Like when we talk about heart rate, we're just trying to approximate info that a continuous lactate monitor would tell us if it's accurate.
Yes. Yeah.
So we're taking out a middleman, estimating things directly. And I think what we'll see is athletes being much better with, intensity distribution models and aerobic development over time and things like that. Then I think what we're also going to see, and this is the part I'm most excited about, is not a confirmation of our biases, which in this case might be like Norwegian styles of training. I think we're going to see refutation of some of our biases as it relates to athletes that might not necessarily have this exact background.
Yes.
Because I think, again, problem with all these training theory models is that we're selecting for the very most responsive athletes on the earth and putting them into a specific type of model that they are responsive to and then testing.
And they're genetic outliers too.
Of course.
So, and then it's like, well, what happens? I think lactate monitors, exactly. It's going to tell us like, what do we see at the mass level? Yeah. And I think that's going to be wildly different.
And post hoc justifications.
Yes.
is essentially how we've wound up in where we are in training theory for the most part. I don't want those. And I think this will help with that. And I think it'll change how we think about training theory at the elite level too, but mainly for everyone.
Well, I think at the very, very, very elite level, like Kipchoge and people going for like very fast marathons, continuous lactate monitoring consistently makes sense. But I guess my question is like, once you get the information from continuous lactate monitoring and correlate that with heart rate data, like, does this need to be something that's done continuously?
Oh, Megan.
I mean, and the answer is probably, is yes for like a very, very elite road marathoner. But I guess for like sub-elite athletes, everyday athletes, like does this, everyone's an elite athlete. Does this make sense?
I don't think we're going to, I mean, we're not going to recommend it to athletes at all.
No.
Yeah. But I do think it's going
to. Oh, no, I will because it's fun.
Maybe.
Yes.
Or maybe it's not.
But maybe it's data overload. I mean, it depends on the relationship the athlete has with data.
Yeah. And we don't know about the reliability yet.
Yeah.
Or the applicability, all of these different questions. But I think it'll be one of the most interesting group-wide science experiments of all time. We're essentially having something just like the heart rate monitor in terms of the way it's useful. It's going to be released all at once, probably within the next few years. I've heard rumors of next year. It could be later. And what's going to happen when, knowing all we know, we introduce this new variable? I think it's going to be such an interesting time in studies, in applied science. I am giddy to learn and hopefully to be proven wrong too and grow as a coach. Like the reason I'm excited, I think I'm going to be a better coach because of what people are learning, not just myself, but like what I'm learning from other people using this type of technology.
Can you imagine the position stands that are going to come out after continuous lactate monitoring and the letters to the editors and then back and forth? It'd be so much controversy.
It's going to be so fun.
I'm so excited.
Okay. Number two, just wanted to flag this one. We have no takes. So Sam Laidlaw just won the Ironman World Championship and stumbled upon this story via his Instagram. We followed him on Instagram and he was coming out on Instagram saying that, you know, I was accused of these things with doping essentially, and I didn't do them. Very like defensive response, as I think we all would in that situation. You know, it's like, what the fuck? But the story behind it is it was a private email exchange that constituted these accusations from one of his competitors' dads to the governing body that should investigate these things. I don't know what that email included, but how spicy, how Real Housewives is this?
I was actually just going to say Bridgerton. Okay. As I was reading this, I was like, this is so much drama.
Yeah.
I was like trying to research it and like do a deep investigation. And I actually stopped because I was like, I threw my hands up and I was like, this is straight Bridgerton. I have no idea.
So it'll be interesting to see how the story unfolds. I don't know if anything will come of this, but it is kind of weird that a dad is sending emails to the governing body.
Yeah.
That strikes me as a strange thing.
It's like if Leo loses a spelling bee in fourth grade and you're like, how dare he? All attacks on Joe, the winner.
If Leo ever loses a spelling bee, I'm fucking coming for Joe.
Yeah.
Joe, you better watch out. Yeah. If you did a single thing wrong in your entire life, you're getting doxxed and put on Maine.
In a private investigation.
Yeah. So that's interesting. We'll follow that as it unfolds. I think the one question I have for you is let's say something like that. Let's say you were him. You were putting in Sam's shoes. How do you respond in that type of situation, assuming you're clean? Like, because I think one of the, I was looking at Slow Twitch, which is the triathlon website. It's like Let's Run, but if Let's Run wasn't a toxic cesspool.
Yeah.
And people were talking about it. And a lot of people were comparing his response to like Lance's responses.
Interesting.
And I was like, that seems so unfair to me because if you're accused of something you didn't do, you're going to respond like Lance. Like,
well, actually, I was going to say, I would respond. Well, my first answer was I would respond with love because that's how I tried to respond with everything. Yeah. But the problem is if you respond to love on matters like this, you might get steamrolled.
Yeah.
And so I feel like it would be like a combination of love and seriousness and like concrete, just being like steadfast in your commitment to clean sport and all of that. But
So
how would you respond to it?
I don't know. I mean, I always say love, but like, yeah, I would just try love, I think. And I think his what happened with Sam here actually points out, like, if you're ever in a situation where, like, someone says something unfounded about you, try to be, either ignore it or try to be as loving as possible because internet, social media outrage, even well-justified, probably will not accomplish anything for you.
That's a great point.
Just because, like, people read in what they want to read into those types of things.
Well, I would say love and talk to a lawyer.
Yes.
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 The first time love and lawyers are mixed.
Okay. Next up, I wanted to highlight the McCurdy Micro Marathon. This was a marathon that was designed to get athletes to run fast.
And they accomplished it.
They did so great. They had deeper, faster times than the Chicago Marathon on this little bike loop course up in New York State, I think.
They had 33 OTQs across the men's and women's field, which is wild. That's a lot of OTQs. But I like, actually, so they had a 9-lap course. But I think this is relevant because you talk about like the benefits of fueling and pacing and slurping. Yeah. And this allowed them 8 opportunities to have bottles. And sometimes at mass marathons like Chicago, it's like chaos. It's hard to grab a bottle. And so this course was designed around fueling and athlete support, and it worked.
Maybe that's the big secret here. So I was thinking it was just like, oh, we're going for it together. Team effort, essentially
drafting,
perceived exertion stuff. Maybe it was just a fueling thing.
Yeah. We're having this closed loop course and you get to see spectators and friends and families and drafting. And so I think it was kind of like the perfect storm of everything coming together.
This reminds me, at the race, someone had a massive sign that they held up that just said, "Go David." And I got so pumped because I was like, oh, that must be a podcast listener. And then when I passed, just blank stare on their face when I yelled huzzah. I said, huzzah! And they're like, who the fuck are you? I'm like, you might not even drink Athletic Greens, do you?
You're like, I'm David, bitch.
So we want to give a big shout out to McCurdy. It's a coaching group that did this for athletes in just a wonderful way. We really like, you know, this is awesome. This is, shows how you can lift up, you know, people on their journeys just by like trying new things.
Well, it probably took a lot of work to pull this off too.
Oh my God. Insane. I mean, I got like 20 emails from about this over the course of.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, like I wasn't involved at all. And some of them were personal, like some of the early ones were personalized, and just points out that like, if that's me, who's not even like focused on elite road athletes as much as trails, how much legwork is happening here? That's what it takes. The hustle that they had is one of the things I'm most inspired by.
I would love to go back to the personalized emails and see if you got catfished. Be like, "Dear David, would you like to race our McCurdy Marathon?"
Yeah, they're not sending me morning studies. Okay, next up, Emily Infeld, Olympian, posted a video online on her Instagram, which is basically her doing a type of like weighted mountain legs, like the single leg step ups with a band. I was pretty pumped about this and I wanted to highlight it.
Actually, she was using a cool machine and I meant to go back to her Instagram and look up the machine, but it was so cool. It was like providing continuous resistance throughout the mountain leg and it looked great. I kind of want it.
Yeah.
Do you want it?
I do.
Yeah.
Well, I want to see what's out there, what we can do. So if you're not doing single leg step ups, I think we can now say it's Emily Enfeld approved, even though it's a little different. But you should try it. It's in our mountain legs routine. Just Google 3-minute mountain legs. I'm sure it'll come up. That video has 6 figures in YouTube views.
Showing off our like very distressed backyard.
Yes. You have dogs in it too. But that was a cool video. Check that out. Do you think we should talk about any more of those?
Let's talk about the cooling at Kona and then we can go on our hot takes. Yes. Perfect.
Next one up is Omnius, which is a brand that makes essentially like headbandy type things.
It looks like you're wearing grills on your head.
Yeah, grills.
Yes. I mean, it literally looks like grills in your mouth applied to your head.
Yeah, like the Nelly song.
Yeah, grills.
I can't remember it. Wow, man. Yeah, I know. I'm so good at
I'm so good at Nelly songs. I'm failing.
I know how it starts. Dun, 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 but I don't know how it ends. So,
probably.
The circle, the circle. Those are my favorite moments of podcast history.
I love that. High five.
High five. So Omnius, it has this really interesting technology that I barely understand, but we were sent it in by a podcast listener and we're going to experiment with it because it seems very interesting. Essentially, it's trying to, you know, harness the material properties of what they're creating to create a longer term cooling mechanism that applies to the skin. And that's huge. Like in the race, for example, many athletes complained about it being warm. And I felt warm early on until mile 9 when I had an aid station volunteer douse me with water. And then it made me so much cooler. It just points out the benefits of mid-activity cooling. If we can figure out a way to do that without needing to constantly be doused with water when it's not available and to do it between aid stations, that would be pretty game changing.
Can you imagine how much you'd have gotten the course record by if you had grills?
Oh my God.
Also, you know, it's legit because Kona athletes are wearing this. Actually, I feel like Kona athletes would just want to wear grills, like such an Ironman thing.
I don't know. I mean, I think they're so optimized.
That's true.
At the little limits of performance with like gear and stuff that they probably aren't doing it just because they're sponsored, but maybe they are. That's
all. Well, not just because they're sponsored. It's like, you know, you gotta be kitted out when you do triathlon.
That's true. You need to look sexy.
Yeah.
You'll fly. Okay, I wanted to talk about one more thing, actually.
Okay, go for it.
This is not related to running. This is related to the Costco CEO. Can I tell you this story?
Yeah, sure. I want to hear this.
So they just announced their new CEO. He's been a part of the company for a while at the top ends. But what I didn't realize until this week is that he started in 1982 as a forklift driver. So he literally started from the bottom, and now he's here. And that, to me, is so cool and exciting. I don't know if something about that story was just like, when we talk about the long-term growth processes and things like that, that is more like hype inducing than an athlete winning a gold medal when they started finishing last in gym class or something.
Oh my gosh. That's like couch to 100 mile. It's like couch to CEO.
Yeah.
Or like, you know, put in the power of hill strides every single day.
Yeah. Yeah. So Costco, I've actually never been inside of a Costco.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Okay. We need to go and get like the dollar ice cream. They have this frozen yogurt that's delicious and costs a dollar and it's so good.
Yeah.
Also, there's samples everywhere.
I don't know.
I know. You have to have a membership.
That's the problem.
Yeah. Memberships, we don't get memberships.
Memberships are much like cleaning my hot tub. They are not for me. But you should subscribe to our Patreon. That's true. That is a good membership.
That is a membership.
And we give a lot.
That's true.
We give a lot on Patreon.
Do we give more than like frozen yogurt?
Yes.
Yes, I think we do. Actually, I mean, think about I'm confident in that. I love frozen yogurt.
Let's emphasize that one more time. If you're listening to this song, we now have 72 bonus episodes on Patreon that you can just go back and listen to. They are amazing sources of information. They're also very goofy. You can message us there. We're responding to messages every day on Patreon. It is so much fun.
It's a lot of content.
It's a lot of content, and it's a labor of love to make this podcast sustainable for us.
It's a lot of don't.
So much it. All right, do you want to get on to hot takes?
Let's do hot takes.
Okay, first one is great and just came into us via email, actually. Hot take, humidity is bullshit. All summer, I've been training in the Texas heat, trying desperately to keep my heart rate down on easy days. Last week, fall arrived and we suddenly had cool, dry weather. My zone 2 pace went from 1140 to 955,
whoa,
seemingly overnight. It's incredibly rude that all my aerobic gains this summer were masked by terrible weather.
Okay, I agree 100%. It's so rude.
Humidity sucks.
It's rude.
It's rude.
Yeah, so rude.
You're channeling like Full House then, right?
You got it.
Yeah.
I am so proud of you.
We're just on the same page.
I don't think you even watched Full House growing up.
I mean, everybody watched Full House, right?
I watched like every episode of Full House twice.
Uncle Jesse?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I think it's John Stamos, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Dude, I just have things in my head that I need to get out into the world. Sometimes about Costco CEOs, sometimes about Full House.
Okay, but answer the question. Did you even watch Full House?
I don't remember.
You don't remember. If you watched Full House, you would remember Full House. I could tell you nitty gritty details about the episodes.
This is all I know. It's that I was a kid that lived in the country and I was lonely. And I had a TV.
Yeah.
So I watched a lot of TV. And I'd heard that like kids that grow up with like, you know, in Raising Leo, more than like an hour of screen time a day, mm-hmm, wind up like perverted or something.
Perverted? That's not true.
Or not perverted in like a sexual way, yeah, but perverted in like a development,
yes,
way.
Yes, yeah.
And I'm like, dude, if you call those screens, I probably had literally 10 hours of screen time every day growing up.
Okay, maybe that's why you're so smart.
But I mean, that's my point. I think
you were taking it all in.
I think so much of what they say about screen time, if we really delved into it, and raising children in general, and probably applies to exercise science, is we're essentially catching confounding variables,
yes,
and calling them drivers.
So yes, it's like, uh-huh, yeah,
most parents that let their kids watch TV like my parents did and expose them to everything, like my parents let me watch R-rated movies and stuff, are not like digesting everything that kids learning from that and talking to them about it and then quizzing them on it.
Well, they also expose you to R-rated books.
Yeah.
Yes. Right alongside the R-rated TV.
But then, and then just talking about it and applying to everything. And then, and similarly, like, I mean, I think we put so much pressure on people to be a certain way when in reality, all that matters is love.
Yeah.
And if we're finding a confounding variable for neglect, then yes, I'm sure that is applicable. But if you watch The Simpsons and then you talk about it with your parents, that can be the best thing ever, I think.
Okay, so we should just watch Full House with Leo. That's what you're saying.
What I'm trying to say, a lot of love. Video games.
Okay, I don't know about that.
Call of Duty age 3, let's fucking go. Okay, but humidity does suck.
Yes, and it does suck, yes.
Coming from the summer, just be aware that it's really hard depending on where you are. I mean, I would say humidity is harder than altitude.
Yes, I agree.
My hot take.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And I totally understand this. So when I was training in DC in the summer of 2014, I was running home. I was commuting home. And it was like the classic DC swamp day. Why did they build that godforsaken city in a swamp? I don't know. Makes sense now.
I was going to say, it kind of fits.
Yeah, with the House GOP.
Yeah.
Totally makes sense. I feel like Kevin McCarthy is right at home there. Actually, no, not Kevin McCarthy. Let's say Jim Jordan. Kevin McCarthy. I feel kind of bad for him now. I just kind of want to give Kevin McCarthy a big hug. Even though he has his problems, like, ideologically and trust-wise, I'm like, dude, I'm sorry.
We just give him some Full House.
Yeah, but Jim Jordan, he's a swamp creature. And my heart rate, when the temperature dropped, a cold front came through on that run, immediately plummeted, and running went from being heinous to being awesome. And so you might be in that zone right now, know your fitness is all there, and you're in a great spot to train for the future.
I love that. Okay, let's get the next hot take.
Okay,
I like this one. There should be a dating app for people looking for others to run with. Search by surface type, pace, where you plan to run, and distance.
Yes, I've heard this a lot.
Yeah. Why is there not one? Maybe there is one.
Maybe there is one. Yeah. I heard recently that there's something called Bumble BFF.
Or something. How cool is that? A Bumble for friends.
Bumble for friends. So Big shout out to that. Sounds like a great idea. I would have loved that when I was younger.
It would have been great. Yeah. Or Bumble for friends who love to fuck. Just depends on your definition of a friend.
Perfect.
Yes.
Yeah. It'd be funny if Bumble BFF just became like Grindr.
I would love to know like what percentage of people on Bumble BFF just start dating.
Yeah. I like it. But what I've heard in the past is that dating apps in general are really frowned upon when they're involved specific like niches.
Oh, I always panic when I say that word.
I don't know. Everyone says it differently.
Says it differently. And whenever I say niche, I'm like, oh, I sound ridiculous.
Yeah, you do sound a little pretentious.
Yeah.
You sound like you're about to go to graduate school. What's a good school for you to go to graduate school in?
Harvard?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, no, because if you went to Harvard, you would know.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that we would know exactly how to say this word.
But that what I've heard is that for some reason, small group oriented, like, dating apps and things don't seem to work. Huh. So investment, like VCs, venture capitalists,
yes,
like laugh those things out of the room, even though everyone has an idea for a dating app for blank. It just doesn't seem to work.
Well, maybe we should start with an app and then it's kind of like Bumble BFF. It just evolves.
Perfect.
Yes. It's like our hot tub. You continuously evolve and grow with each other and then reproduce. It's evolution.
I like it.
Yeah.
Making me feel better about the hot tub. All right. You ready for Listener Corner?
Let's do it.
Before we do, though, you know what we have to do?
John G?
I was going to say Athletic Greens.
Oh, shoot. We probably should do both.
Well, the main thing we have to do is Athletic Greens, because one of the main things I have been doing is taking that sweet green nectar.
Have you been taking it with ketones? How does that work?
Yeah, well, actually, I take them at the same time, so both after exercise.
Do you mix them?
No.
That would be quite the cocktail.
Holy shit.
Can you imagine? Oh. It's like that Listener Corner where they were talking about AG1 at the bar. You might as well just do AG1 and ketones for the sweet, sweet runner game.
That's such a good idea.
Yeah.
I have been like mixing in some like salt and element, also like elementy essentially, which is a type of salt, like a chocolate salt into it.
Yeah.
I get pretty nasty with my AG1.
You get real nasty.
I get freaky and with my AG1.
Sometimes you try to serve it to me. I'm like, no, I want the plain original AG1.
Maybe this is what happens if you expose your kid to R-rated material when they're like 8 years old. Yeah. They start doing freaky shit with AG1.
With green powder.
Okay. So drinkag1.com/swap, S-W-A-P. If you've been listening to this podcast, you know it is the number one thing we recommend for a very easy multivitamin that has everything you need in it, including micronutrients. And when we talk about things like heart rate, adaptation, all of that, we have seen it time and time again with professional athletes and athletes of all levels help them so much. So drinkag1.com/swap. There you get bonuses, vitamin D for a year, some money off. It's awesome.
Seriously, it's so good. It blows my mind. I'm confused by it. I'm like, why is it so good?
It's so fine. It blows my mind. Hey, AG1.
It's delicious.
Okay, we're on Listener Corner. We can save John G for next week. We love John G, but you
okay,
know
John G.
Just listen to another episode.
Okay, no, John G is fucking amazing. I even wanted to pimp them before AG1.
You haven't even taken off your bra from John G in the last like 4 weeks.
I know. I don't think I even washed it.
No.
Yeah, I'm like, it's so good. Honestly, it's probably the power of John G. I don't think it even smells.
Okay, so johng.com. Use offer code SWAP. We love this company.
No, seriously, like we love them so much.
Yeah, we got to meet with the two co-founders just last week. They blew us away.
Actually, they did. Yeah, it was kind of wild.
I would trust them with my life.
We might.
Yes.
Yeah.
With our 47 children.
Yeah.
But there you can find all the best winter running gear for everything ahead. Get it from John G. This is the place to kit yourself out this year like you are a triathlete at Kona.
Oh, kit yourself out with grills.
So johng.com, tell them Swap sent you. Just write in Swap, something like that. Okay, you want to get on to Listener Corner?
Let's do it.
All right, here is a great one. I don't even know where to start, but I am a huge fan of the pod, religiously checking Spotify on Tuesdays for every week's new episode. Please click follow there while you're doing the little thing. Yeah, just trying to get that game going. I love listening for my silly long runs, and every time I always have thoughts related to the episode where I'm like, I should totally email them and tell them. And every week I forget. But here I am. And I'm not even sure I'm sending this to the right place. It's the right place. I'll find it wherever you send it. To sum things up, after many swap filled long runs, I'm really thankful that coaches like you guys exist in the world. I used to be competitive in another sport where food doping was not allowed, to say the least. I was screamed at every practice for being the weakest on my team for years. Not pretty enough, not light enough, and built up a reputation for, quote, not using my brain. And it has not been easy at all, but I honestly owe a lot of overcoming those negative mindsets and feelings to the SWAP pod. So all I can say is thank you. Uh-huh. I always loved running in the outdoors as a kid/teen, but was never allowed to have much time to run with this other sport I was doing. After so many years of competing, I really lost my love and still have a hard time understanding a lot of what happened. I I did this sport through so many injuries and concussions, as well as when I did bring up injuries to coaches. They told me to stop faking it or that I was being dramatic. But that is a whole separate discussion to unpack that I could talk about for ages. I retired a few years ago. So since then, it's been about me having a good ass time on my silly little runs. And then she goes on to say, I hope I can move back out west soon. I've raced up to road marathons and shorter distance trail. I'm currently running New York City in a couple weeks, and I'm on the lookout for a 50-mile or 100K trail ultra coming up. So if you have any fun recs, please send them my way.
Okay, your brain is like an AI for confidentiality. Yeah. That was amazing.
You think I did good?
You crushed that.
Yeah.
Almost as good as this listener who's clearly incredible.
Yeah, they're so, so cool. And it's interesting to think about how we're shaped by, you know, influences in our lives.
Yes. Yeah.
And sometimes those influences can be coaches. And I think toxic coaching, toxic teachers, any of that is so fucking terrible because of how it distributes throughout the rest of our lives. Mm-hmm. Actually, an example that came out this week is the Ingebrigtsen brothers wrote a letter that was published in a Norwegian newspaper about their father, Geert, who also was their coach. So these, you know, gold medalist Jacob, and essentially call them out for what he is, an abuser, alleged abuser. And like thinking about how that affects long-term trajectory.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Just breaks my heart.
Especially when it's related to a sport that you love. Yeah. I mean, I feel like that's such a hard triangle. It's like father, coach, sport, and seeing that come together. And I feel like there's so many examples of that in like athletic history, and it's sad.
Yeah. And sometimes it's coaching, and sometimes it's like other
mentors or parents or
even
friends.
Passing comments.
Yeah.
Like the amount that passing comments made a difference in my life and I've seen make a difference for other athletes. Like one of the main places I've heard it is people saying, someone said, I have like thick thighs or something,
mm-hmm.
Which is a compliment, but someone said it in such a way that made that athlete go down dark paths in their lives. And it took one comment to do that. And it shows our power for good, but also, you know, the amount that we all need support on this journey. And so, you know, that's really significant. I actually saw something like an interesting little point that I don't know like the veracity of it, but mm-hmm. hadn't brought it up to you yet. It said that most men are only complimented a few times in their whole life.
What?
And they remember each of those compliments until they die.
Wow.
And I don't know if that's true necessarily, but I think that there will be listeners out there that it really resonates for.
Yeah. Why do you think that is? I never really thought about that gender component to it.
Yeah. You know, so I'm cribbing other thinkers' ideas here. So I mentioned Scott Galloway on this podcast before. Mm-hmm. I like him a lot. He's an economic business guy, but he talks a lot about a lost generation of men and trying to build up the opposite of toxic masculinity.
Yes,
so like kind, caring, compassionate masculinity, but says one of the things we need to do to make that happen is to uplift these experiences that while, you know, society is much easier on men in many ways, it's also hard in other ways that are still valid.
Yes.
And I think this comment probably gets back to that. Like, I feel that a little bit. I had sports, thankfully, a place where I got insulted, but I never had toxic coaches. And then I got complimented too, you know, for success in those things. And it's probably one reason I gravitated towards it because I wasn't getting that other places. You know, I was being called things like the little hamburger joke I made earlier, like piggy and stuff like that, you know? So like for everybody out there, you're loved, but especially for people that might not have those compliments in their lives, like, dude, you're so fucking loved. And I wish we could tell that to everybody.
Well, I love that point. And I love the episode that you talked about toxic masculinity, actually, because I felt that was a really important point and your takes were helpful on it. But question for you, do you remember like all the times I tell you I love you? Because it's a lot.
Oh, no. I mean,
I kind of like hope you do and don't at the same time, because it's just like piles and piles and piles. It's like hoarding at this point.
No. I mean, it's the best. It's why I have superpowers. You know, like the video of me finishing Blue Sky, like, I was very close to the course. It was going to be close. I didn't know exactly how close, but I knew it was going to be within a few seconds away.
I knew it was going to be within a few seconds and my heart was beating so fast. Yeah.
And to hear you screaming on that video, at the time, I might have processed it like a little bit outside of my brain, but to hear you screaming, it really just brought home, you know, this is what gives me power, you know?
Yeah.
And I love you for that. And thank you. But also seeing you with Leo, like Leo at 1 year old. Like you've probably told him you love him 100,000 times. And I might even told him more. And I think there's so much power in that. And like, for this listener, when you're thinking about your journey to running, I love the silly little run comment because that to me, it's like the ultimate embodiment of love.
Yeah.
Is this openness to the silliness of what we're dedicating ourselves to. So you're so incredible. Cannot wait for your journey on the trails and beyond. And hell yeah, for overcoming everything you've been through. You are so damn strong.
Oh, I totally agree. And I'm going to add one thing to the quarters pile. I freaking love you.
I love you so much.
Thanks for stuff. This was so fun.
It was so fun. You know what else is fun?
What? Do, 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 do.
Huzzah!
We love you.